time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 17th of December 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday the 17th of December, Sharon Brown talked to Elizabeth and James about the Waiheke Trading Facebook page. She talked to Waiheke Radio's Dougal Thompson and new Green MP Denise Roach.
Here we are, and Liz and James have come in, so we're just going to test the mics and make sure they're working. Would you guys like to just say hi?
Hey, Sharon, how are you?
Well, try again. Well, I can't hear anything through the headphones, but hopefully that's working. Oh, yes, there we go. Great, good.
Hi, Liz. Sharon.
Great, good. Okay, so you guys are with Waiheke Trader, and Liz, you set that up. So tell us about that.
Oh, I just sort of had signed up to TradeMe, and somehow I'd managed to get frequent emails, daily emails, of things that were being sold on Waiheke. And I sort of, you know, started seeing a lot of Waiheke's primary school jumpers and books, and I just thought, you know, we should be selling this here, you know. And I particularly was after some bunk beds, and it sort of inspired me. And I just put a little posting on Facebook, whether to create it. If I had a few yeses, then I'll just give it a go. And there were quite a few comments saying, yes, do it, try it. And, you know, within about 2 weeks, they had something like 400 members. And then Andy Spencer suggested to me that I'd ask this friend called James, who's a whiz on the computers, particularly Facebook, for some help.
Right, okay.
And it's really...
Now, you aren't coming through very well, so there's something not right here. Try again?
How about that? No, not coming through.
Not coming through, but maybe it's a button that I'm not pressing that I should be pressing.
Do you want to share
this? Yeah, do you want to try... Or come over here and share this one? Okay. It might just be easier, because I'm not sure why these aren't working. Great.
Cool. So, it's one of those sort of fun, spontaneous things that you have no idea where it's going to go until you get it started, and suddenly it takes off. And I mean, when we look back on it, it's really obvious, because the thing about the internet is that there's huge amounts of information out there, and that applies to things that people are wanting to trade as well. But the secret is to make the information relevant. And when you have a Waiheke Trading Facebook page, and you know that everybody who's on that group is on Waiheke, then it just makes the whole process so much more easy. You know, you're looking through stuff which is available to you, and it's not somewhere else. You don't have to ship it across the water and all of that. And plus, half of the people on there are your friends anyway. Mm. So
can I just ask, because there's already a group called Y-Trade, isn't there? So why has that not taken off, or why has this garnered interest but not that?
It's very simple. It's that people are on Facebook. It's as simple as that. It's because it's within Facebook. It means that people don't have to go. They don't have to leave Facebook in order to see who's been posting what recently and who's commented on their the posts that they've put up of the things that they're selling or looking for.
Right.
So you don't have. It's just the simplicity of not having to go anywhere else. People are on Facebook. Period.
Okay, and presumably, and so there's no cost involved either. Is that right? So it's just literally a Facebook page, and then you join it and you trawl through, and then if something's available, you buy it. How do you know if it hasn't been sold to someone else? You don't.
You do, because the comment structure is such that you know, people are commenting on things.
Oh,
right?
Okay. So if you bought your bunk beds, you would say thanks for the bunk beds.
Yeah.
Okay. What if you, or, and people do that? They go back and they say something, or they're asked to say something? Or?
Yeah, and what's really good is a lot of people are using it also for something that they want, not just what they sell. Or, you know, I'm looking for something. Does anybody know anybody? Or I'm trying to find a second-hand bike. And then somebody will suggest somebody that recycles bikes or fixes bikes. So it's not just buying and selling on there. You're using it to share information regarding things that they want.
Okay, lovely. Good.
And functionally it works because for two things. There's a search bar in the top right of the group. So if you were to put the word bed in there, what you'll get is a chronological list of all of the entries that have the word bed in them.
Right.
Right. So you can see
if it was, like, you know, 5 weeks ago, that it might be a bit dead anyway. Or
well,
something.
Yeah. Well, you're going to look at the most recent ones first,
right,
likely,
yeah,
because they're the more likely ones to come up. And the other thing is that when people comment on a post, it bumps the post back up to the top. So when something has been sold and the deal is done, then nobody's going to be commenting on it anymore, and it just slowly disappears off the bottom, and all the current stuff keeps floating to the top.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a free platform, which means that nobody has to make any money off it. So there's no trading. There's no percentage cost going back to TradeMe or you know some other service. Mm. So
there is your time though, but in a way you've set it up now and it's done, and there's nothing really more to do. Is that right?
Yeah. No. I mean, obviously, initially setting it up, and you know there is. Sponsor so fast, so quickly, and then I got James to kind of help, and because I'm not a computer person at all, but I've learned so much over the last few weeks.
Keep on going.
I've learned lots from the computer, but I just love the fact, you know, there's so many of my friends that have bought really good products that they're really pleased with. There's so many people out there that were pleased to offload some stuff. And, you know, someone this morning had put, she's got some banks, so she just wants somebody, you know, please come and collect them and take them away. So it's just a great way.
Mm.
Everybody on the island, there's no shipping, there's no queuing in the post office, there's no postage costs.
Yeah. Oh, great. And there's no bunk beds getting wet in the rain waiting for someone to drive past and pick them up.
And there's the whole social thing. There's you know, people coming on. I think I was looking through the post the other day, and one of the ones that had the most likes to it, because you can like as well as comment on a post, right? The one that had the most likes was one where somebody had sincerely offered some heartfelt gratitude for something. I can't even remember what it was now, but somebody had just put a post up there and said, thank you so much, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
It was the cot in town.
It was a cot, yeah. Oh, and everybody liked this post, so it's like, you know, it's a real Waiheke marketplace. It's so cool.
What a hoot. Okay, great. And so James, you've also got the Ubi thing. Is that still going? Because there was a whole bit of trading going on, not necessarily with bunk beds, but there was fruit and stuff, wasn't there? Because it was a similar sort of principle, wasn't it? That you'd sort of go, I've got a bag of plums and I've got some jars and look, here's a bit of a sugar stash and here are some random lids.
Yeah, well, that was the Waiheke Plum Drive,
right.
which was about, must be 2-3 years ago, I think, we did that. And but Ubi itself went off to Grey Lynn to test out a fruit and veggie box scheme, which has gone really well. And now that system is proven and is working in that marketplace, and it needed a larger marketplace to test that, it's been operating on Waiheke now for about probably about 6 weeks.
Oh, so right.
Every Tuesday, if you go to ubi.org, you can order up your box. It'll come on Ubi Tuesdays in the afternoon, and you get a box of fresh fruit and veg, which has in it a list of what the food is in the box, where it came from, so who grew it and how far it had to travel. So, you know, I'm looking down the list going, okay, so who are the Waiheke growers that are supplying the box this week? You know, and we're not supplying everything from Waiheke because we can't get enough yet,
but a
portion of it.
That's coming
there
from
is
Waiheke?
A bit. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
How cool is that?
And then you get a bunch of recipes for how to use whatever is in the box. It's I love Tuesdays.
Right, okay. So Ubi Tuesday, that's a bit like Coca-Cola Christmas, isn't it? It's got a slightly odd ring to it. But anyway, we'll go with that for now.
I think isn't there a Beatles song that kind of has a ring like that?
Yeah. Monday.
Yeah. Anyway, good.
But lovely. So the other thing that grew, Shireen, is worth pointing out. So Liz started the Waiheke Trading. So if you go onto Facebook and look Waiheke Trading, you should be able to find it. The other thing which became apparent that we needed was a sister group, which we called, which Simon Mansfield suggested we start, and that's called Waiheke Community Notice Board.
Okay, so there's
so
the
that's
link.
For everything else, right? So that's for all the stuff that's not about trading, you know? So when you don't want to bother people with the notice about you lost Crocs, which was what sort of kicked it off, then you put that over on there. Well, we started that at 4 o'clock one afternoon, like the day that Simon suggested it, and I think within 24 hours we had 180 people, and in a couple of days it was 200 and something.
Right. And so what? So that's okay, so it's got sort of lost property, but it's also got sort of promoting bands,
events. Oh, gosh, what else is on there? There's all sorts of...
The artworks, you know, the sort of the murder mystery that's just been advertised, and they'd update it and say, we've got a few tickets left. So it's just anything going on in the community.
Okay. And how does that work? I mean, do you... because I can see the other thing. If I'm looking for something, I can do a search for it. Is it the same principle? You need to know what you're looking for? Or do you just trawl through millions of things? Because in a way, events are something that you maybe, you know, look in the Gulf News and go, oh, I wonder what's on this week. Whereas this, I mean, do you have to actually target what you're looking for is what I'm asking?
But it will work in the same way as Waiheke trading, is that, you know, the event in artworks, the murder mystery, eventually that will just come down to the bottom once it's passed, because there'll be no more comments on there. And then new events or things happening on the island will just come to the top. So you'll only see the current things that people want to talk about at the top.
Right. And in a sense, it's a way of getting reviews, isn't it? Because you could go to the murder mysteries and go, oh my God, this is a not-to-be-missed event. And then people go, oh, I hope there's a ticket for tomorrow night. Whereas they might not necessarily have thought that it was that great a thing to go to in the first place.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then somebody will say, don't bother to go to Shop the Rock because they've sold out of tickets, but there's still a few tickets left at blah, 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 you know. So all that information gets shared.
Right.
And the thing that's different at the moment anyway is that the notice board group doesn't tend to have as many posts on it. The Waiheke trading is just going ballistic.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, right. So it's not like, you know, you use the word trawl. You don't really have to trawl through stuff. You know, it's like there's a page full of recent things.
Right.
And then you'll notice a little line which says older posts, which basically indicates all the stuff that you've already seen before. And so it's not, you know, that doesn't take long to have a quick check in and see what's happening.
So how does this work in relation to money-making ventures? Like, you know, it's paltry amounts of money, but for example, the Gulf News and the Marketplace do get some revenue off advertising things. Is this likely to have a sort of a negative effect on them, or, you know, there's space for everyone?
It's a really good question, and that's come up on the site. And yesterday I went to see Liz at Gulf News to just to talk about it and see what she wants to do, because from my experience, so, I mean, I've spent the last year really focused in social media. I've been tutoring graduate diploma students in social media and coaching the staff at Otago Polytechnic, for example. And what I'm noticing is that things are moving from a broadcast model of media, which tends to be one-to-many kind of a mode. So newspapers in particular, magazines, TV, you know, they're all about this broadcast model, one-to-many, yeah, where you get the information out. But there's no way for people to react and respond and engage with it. Whereas online media, the likes of you know, things that you can do in Facebook and other places, gives people an opportunity to engage, and that's where it's going. It's moving in that direction incredibly quickly. I mean, if you look back 10 years and you think about what we were doing in this online space, it was virtually nothing. It was very, very minimal, yeah? So this is the change, and this is why newspapers, printed media is starting to go out of fashion. You know, lots of newspapers are going under. It may have an impact. It quite likely will. I mean, if you can sell your item on Waiheke Trading, then why would you pay for an ad in the Gulf News? Well, you know, and while I want to support the Gulf News, you know, it's an important tool, and it's a great asset for the community. You can't change the fact that people are making this transition for themselves onto platforms that are free. And this is a lot of what social media is about, is that, you know, we're using these platforms that once they're set up, there's no major cost involved in maintaining them. So, you know, we can use a Facebook group and it costs nothing to do our trading.
Mm. Yeah? I mean, I think really the answer to that question is not everyone is connected to the internet. And, you know, I think we you know, those of us who do use Facebook, I'm not a great Facebook user myself, but, you know, those of us who are in tune with social media often don't realize that there's a whole sector of the population that don't have the startup cost to either have a proper internet connection or a computer. And for them, you know, I think newspapers do serve a really useful function. But the other thing is that, you know, our local newspapers, I mean, they are a public record, not just of, you know, things that are bought and sold, even though they maybe need that money to survive. They do provide a really valuable record of, you know, things that happen in the community.
But if you look at a lot of the items that are actually being sold, a lot of them are people that would normally have them in a garage sale, and what they can't sell through Waiheke Trading, they're just continuing with their garage sales on a smaller scale. And there's a lot of people that have things just stashed in cupboards under the house that normally just sit there rotting for years. And they're saying, you know, and they're selling things that they never thought they would get money, and they wouldn't pay to put those things in the Gulf News anyway.
Yes. I think you're right, and I think that's maybe a different thing. So people maybe advertise their garage sale, but then once they've done that once, they've got some residual stuff, and then they might stick that up on here anyway. So there's probably a space to have both, and different models still. Yeah.
I think the other thing that's worth talking about in relation to this is the sense that it's building links and strength in the community. It's building bonds in ways that were... we wouldn't have thought of, but it's happening where, you know, I trade something with somebody and I go, well, I'll drop it off at such and such, and then I see the person that I'm dropping it off to who's not actually the person who bought it, because the person who bought it is going to come into that location later. So it's building all of these bonds and links and connections, and what it's doing is it's also building a sense of a greater sense of trust within the community. You know, there's an enormous amount of trust that is being built up through this, and I think that is a tremendous potential precursor to greater local democracy, to greater participatory democracy, because we're learning how to interact with one another in their online space in a really free and easy way. Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Right.
Just one of the things
interesting
that I wanted to mention is that we've decided to keep the group as a closed group. So there's no sort of fear of anything that you post in being set out to general public. Unless you're a member of the group, you cannot see the phone numbers, whether you're in or out. The information that you post regarding your personal details only stays within members of Waiheke Trading.
Oh, okay. Right. So that's a sort of an additional level of protection. Right. Okay.
And that's different with the notice board. The notice board is an open group. So, anybody can come in and have a look at the Waihi community notice board and see everything that's posted there,
right,
which is as it should be. It's a notice board. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, lovely. Great. Oh, well, look, it sounds like an amazing initiative. And, good luck with that. I'll have to get in and have a look. I think it's quite, as a general note, I think it's quite interesting how people can live facets of their lives in different spaces. And I'm not a Facebook user, and so sometimes people will say, oh, you know, I posted blah blah on Facebook, why didn't you come to my party? And I'm like, well, because I didn't know. You know, it's quite interesting how you've got these networks that you can participate in or not.
But I think there's a lot of people on the island from overseas like myself. And, you know, for me, it's a great way to keep in contact with all my family, all my friends that I made in the US. So I'm quite on there, probably, you know, quite a few times, 3 or 4 times a week at least. Obviously now a bit more with the Waiheke Trading taking off. And so that's why I think people are on there, because there's so many of us on this island from overseas.
Right. Yeah. Okay, no, great. Lovely. Well, yes, buy and sell lots of stuff. Tell us about lots of events. And good luck with that. Thank you.
Waiheke Radio.
Great. Well, here we are with Dougal for a bit of Christmas cheer other things. But he's now caught up with the wires, and he's in a wires and headphone situation, but he's bound to get that sorted out within the next half an hour. So, you know, stand by, everyone, for a bit of humour.
Hey, listen to your music choice. What's happened to your music choice? Funeral march.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear it?
Trenton Hospital, it's not the best choice.
I know. I was really sorry about that. I really like the Notting Hill Billies. I just didn't really look to see what the track was.
Not one of the best ones for them, was it?
No, it was very dreary.
I had a really lovely description. Not heard, because I was reading it in a book.
I was reading aloud, so I did actually hear it.
Well, I do sometimes with a finger, and the night came, and but this was a description that said they stood out from the drabness like a clown at a wake. How fantastic,
excellent,
is that? I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it so much.
They should have more clowns at wakes.
They should. Oh, yes. Yeah, anyway, let's stop talking about the Trevin Hospital. Right.
Moving swiftly on,
yes.
Right.
Life is full of disappointments. I've been looking at disappointments in life. Major disappointment. I think it's part of that looking back on life.
Right, that happens around Christmas.
Year, that happens around
yeah.
Christmas.
I usually save New Year for that to go, oh yeah, all those resolutions I made last year never quite came to fruition.
Didn't sort of happen.
I haven't taken up smoking yet.
How about that? How about we have a resolution to start stuff, like start drinking more, start smoking more, start you know, being sort of abusive to other road users and things like that. And to the person who did 2 U-turns in Ocean View Road this morning, well done. That, I've never seen that done before.
Especially how did they notice that?
Especially
what, two of them.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you ended up going back the same way you started off?
I didn't. But he did. The person that was in front of me did, yeah. It was a cracker. I thought, I'm not sure I believe it. And it was like, you know how people do that? They wait until they see you coming, then they make that sort of a move. You think,
really fast.
You know, settle down. So it was good. Nice to know things are full swing on the island. What was
I
talking about? Disappointment.
Yeah, go on.
Flat croissant. Have you ever had a flat croissant?
Yeah, they're a bit doughy, aren't they?
That's a major disappointment.
Yeah.
You know, I was all set for this really yummy croissant this morning, and when the sun was glimpsing through, and it was one of those bake-it-your-own jobs.
Oh, no.
You know, and they usually come out, you know, fantastic.
Right.
And I was all set, all primed up for this, and it came out flat.
Oh, no. It could be the damp. You know, sometimes damp affects things, and, you know, I read the weather this morning, so I know all about humidity.
Yeah.
And we're looking at 86% humidity this morning and 93% tonight.
Well,
and I do think that affects croissants.
That. Well, it's not funny you should say that, because, I mean, it was fairly
deadpan
how you said it. But it was,
I'm not a funny person.
Interesting you say that, because last year, I talked Christmas cakes for a moment. Oh, and I've got my top 10 Christmas cracker jokes, if
right.
we get a chance to have a
look forward to that.
No, you don't really.
Sounds
when you
like
hear
a blast.
Them, I tell you. What was I saying? Humidity and baking. Christmas cakes. Last year, we have a family thing, my daughter and I, about making Christmas cakes.
All right.
So I head down to Christchurch and make the Christmas cake, bring it back. Not hers.
Did you get to say?
No, this is all done. This is all done,
this is all done within a day. Make the cake.
You can come down, make the cake. You get one night. You can stay over one night,
right.
And you're off. So that's
yeah.
it.
But the thing about Christmas cakes is they're very heavy. You have to be careful not to sink the plane. Eh?
I get done with the excess baggage just about when I come back. I go down on one of those tickets. You know those cheapy tickets with the bags and
right.
no clothes and things like that. And then kind of get on naked, and then everything on top
kilo.
Of that. Everything on top of that, you get hit for on the way back. So you come back armed with these cakes that are, you're right, have got a bit of weight in them. But last year when I brought the cake back and I iced it, did the royal icing, thank you very much, which is tricky to do, they tell me, unless you're in the know.
You do it with marzipan?
Yeah, I made my own marzipan as well.
Okay. Oh, you'll have to tell us about your top recipe. Sometime in this half an hour, we're going to have to find a time for you to tell us your recipe.
The guys at Foursquare, just to give them a plug, although there are other food outlets available on the island, were really helpful in terms of how to, because I was looking for the marzipan roll stuff.
Right.
This must be fascinating for listeners right now. And and I couldn't find any on the island, so they suggested at the Foursquare, why not make your own? And I thought it'd be quite complicated.
You were like, yes, I do have a spare 24 hours up my sleeve to crush
difficult.
Almonds.
I thought it's really not that difficult, actually. You know, you get the almonds, I can't remember what you do, you get some, it's basically just sugar and almonds.
Right.
And water, and you just mix it. Oh, I think a couple of it, I can't remember. Anyway, mix it up. Made my own. Did the icing, but it took about, the icing should harden within about 2 to 3 hours, probably. Took about a week and a half last year, and I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't understand it. I followed all the instructions and everything else, and I happened to meet Patrick from Ringaware Bakery, down here at Artworks, in fact. And I said, oi, you're a baker. So I had this bizarre experience in the Christmas cake.
It's been like showing your doctor your spots. Hey, can you just check this out as you walk down the road?
So long as you don't tell anyone at the rugby club about this. But, you know, hello, Trev. So I said, look, like my Christmas cake. I said, the icing. I said, it's taken about a week or so for this thing for the icing to go hard in the cake. And he said, humidity.
Yes.
He said, because he'd had to shift his bread. Not so much the recipe, but I think the baking times and things accommodate.
Really?
Oh, no, sometime in the recipe too, less water, more water thing for the baking. Because of the humidity levels, they were really higher last year. They were incredible. This year, the icing hardened in about 2 hours. So
wow.
There you go. Difference in humidity when I was making them.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Excellent.
Stuff, right? Yeah.
Indeed so. It is. So are you going to inflict some Christmas jokes on us?
Yeah, I might do. Yeah. Let me just... I'll fire these up and find them. They had... They had the top 10 Christmas jokes from Nuts Magazine. Nuts Magazine is a lads mag in the UK.
It was a bit like Mad or something?
Or? No. It's a bit like Loaded and right, FHM. Okay. It's a bit like a gentler version of Playboy and things. It's a blokey thing, you know, and all that kind of... the most gorgeous woman with the largest breasts and all that kind of stuff. Mm. You know, really insightful news that they have. And they were one of the first... they were one of the first lads mags to come out in the UK, and they used to come out on a Tuesday. They might still do, I don't know, but they the tagline, because they came out on a Tuesday, the tagline they had for the magazine was "Women don't need help on a Tuesday." So I'm not quite sure. I think that means that it's okay to buy the magazine and read it because there's nothing else to do. But because they brought out their most groan-inducing festive gags, I think it's quite appropriate they've got a groan-inducing tagline for their magazine, because I don't quite understand that one. However, yes, so we've got that. But the interesting thing is we've got a we've also got the Telegraph's top 10 Christmas cracker jokes.
Oh, okay.
And
Telegraph readers have a sense of humour?
Well, this is what we can find out, because compare a lad's mag to the Telegraph to see how they do in terms of a difference in... Christmas cracker jokes. So these are stuff that came out of Christmas cracker. Should we do a couple of these? And then I was having a look at the new... did you have a look at the artist's impression for the supermarket?
Ah, yeah.
Brother, did you see that?
Vaguely, yeah.
So I might have a wee chat about that.
Okay, excellent.
It looks appalling. I was thinking... talking about new buildings... I was having a chat with you know how they had the library display.
I went down and had a look.
It looks really fantastic.
Yeah. What's nice is that the librarians are so positive about it, and they're actually coming out actively
stoked.
And saying it.
Yeah, they're
because
absolutely stoked.
I haven't, you know, in the past, they've been quite neutral and they've kind of been hanging back because I think they've been a bit sort of, you know, not brilliantly happy, but they're actually coming out and saying how great it is, which I think is great.
Yeah. So it looked. I was quite impressed. I had a thought on top of some of the recent conversations about our lack of. It was about the possible container usage for. Was it the hospice?
Oh,
is that
the right?
It's not a hospice,
but it is sort of care for the elderly to replace Seaside Sanctuary.
Yes, yeah. And because that whole container design, there's a whole movement through Europe on container design, and it is absolutely stunning.
Oh, is it?
Spectacular. There's restaurants made out of containers, cafes made out of containers. So it's just absolutely phenomenal. I thought that was a brilliant idea. You can do so much with them.
So sorry, where did we get to that? Is that because you're thinking library containers?
The reason we got that it was because when that was being talked about and when the new library came out, we probably couldn't do it for the supermarket because it's a private commercial job. But there's 5.1 million going into the library. I thought, what if we made it 4 million and just took a million and built the built the premises for the
hotel
for the aged who want to have terminal care on the island. I thought that'd be fantastic. We can always kind of the community could help out with the paving and the stuff for the library, maybe save a mill and build the centre for the two for the price of one.
Right.
Just a thought.
Yes.
But I do like the new library. I think it's going to be great.
It did seem weird that it was 1 million for landscaping. I always find these things are sort of a bit random.
That seems
massive. But I always think one of the things that happens on Waiheke is there's always a sort of an eye on what the tourists will think.
Right.
So there's always this eye on landscaping and making things look beautiful and having the right signage and having sort of random flowers up the path.
And doing our curbing. Stop curbing. I hate it. It's driving me up the wall.
I'm right or not, but it seems that the local board are also not that happy because they feel they're getting shafted a little bit about Auckland Transport. I know we always have a go at the local board around roving issues, but it seems that they're also trying to prevail on Auckland Transport and they don't get told stuff and
things just happen.
I
think it's an absolute shocker. I think, like you're saying, it's almost that beautification for
because we do it in Glenfield or, you know, or Parnell or whatever it is, and it just gets blanket. And it's
but
just,
I think it's also this thing of, you know, Waiheke is the jewel in the Hauraki crown and Auckland and blah, blah, blah. Because whenever you get on a flight or see any kind of tourist information, they're always, always, always banging on about Waiheke as a destination to go. So I think they, you know, it's they really want it to be beautiful for all these people who come
but
over.
But it is beautiful. That's the thing.
That's
we don't need strips of concrete to make it beautiful.
We don't need landscaped gardens to make it beautiful.
It's just bizarre for me. So just back to library for a moment. I think the what I love about the library right now is it's small. So I really like the fact that even if there's one person in there, you get a sense that there's something going on, if that kind of makes sense. It's not this vast empty space just rattling with books. So I guess the concern I have with the larger building is that winters and things like that, if there's only a few people in there, you're going to have this this sense of being a vast space. Now, I know there's lots of things to do. They've got the internet area, there's meetings areas going in, which I think is a phenomenal idea. There's a designated kids area, which is, again, a phenomenal idea. But I just really hope that whatever they do inside helps keep that sense of that, you know, closeness when you're in the library. So, like, I mean, sometimes it's frustrating because you're cheek and jowl with 42 people firing up their laptops and things, but that's part of the whole experience of going to the library. So but I think it's great that the team down there who do a phenomenal job. I really enjoy the library, and I think, you know, they deserve some decent space to work in, which is going to be fantastic. And to have that meeting area and the kids area is going to be superb. Not quite the same as a supermarket, which when I looked at that artist impression, I thought you could have been on Eroa Main Street, or you could have been on the middle of Glenfield or anywhere else. It just looks like a big box with glass shops underneath.
Yeah.
And it's...
it does look unfortunate, isn't it? It's this thing of when you get a sort of a generic type of structure and then you just plonk it you know, in different places because it is the generic countdown.
Yeah.
Boxy-looking structure.
It reminds me of the shops that are out by the airport. As you're heading to the airport in Auckland, on the left-hand side, you've got like a strip of shops with I think it's a Food Town supermarket in there. And yes, there are other supermarkets available, but you have that, and then you've got other sort of shops in there as well. But it's just like it's like they've all picked that up and stick it somewhere else. And it's like, you know.
What I find is interesting is that it's quite close to the road. And it's also, I thought it would be further set back.
Yeah, I'm
the
not,
space.
Yeah, there's this impression I'm not sure about, because you're right. I mean, look at all that space, and I thought it'd be nicely tucked away, hopefully behind some trees or something, so you didn't actually see it.
You know,
it kind of disappeared quietly in the background and blended in. But this, like you say, looking at this, is right on Belgium Street almost. And I can think of nothing worse, but there we go.
And then the other interesting thing is that it's apparently non-notified, or it's not.
This is quite good. It's
really
selective notification or something. So it's only...
people who live in the street. Well, who lives in the street?
That's great.
Caterpillars at, it's quite bizarre.
Ah, it's a goodie. Yeah. Anyway, so it was a couple of little things that struck my mind. Now, what were we going to... We were going to have a look at Christmas cracker jokes.
Yes, we were.
So, will we do a number? We'll start from the bottom and go to the top. Shall we do that?
Okay,
Did you want to give the listeners a respite?
Well, I just thought I'd play a little track while we get ourselves organised.
Okay.
Now,
good idea.
This
what
says,
have we got?
Well, it's a bit of a mystery. It says, CPU Canon Pratt Ehrlich. Mean old street. Now, because it's Pratt and Ehrlich, I'm wondering if it's a local thing.
Oh, well, let's find out.
So I'm going to play it.
I heard Pat last night, actually. He was playing at Vino Vino's.
Right,
Twinkling
okay.
Away. It was very nice.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Have you heard the choir play?
I have heard the choir. I managed
they're
to
great,
hear them at the library.
They?
Phenomenal.
They're
absolutely
so great.
Phenomenal.
Actually, we're doing really well in choirs at the moment. Apparently, there was a joint event between the kids.
Big one,
we
had
the V12 choir and then...
Sister Shout.
Sister Shout.
And then
we
had their offshoot as well, whatever that one is.
Right.
And I've heard, with the exception of the school one, I've heard them all through the library, or through the events that they had during...
Music Week.
That's right. Yeah, which was just... And they are. You're so right. They're just very, very talented. And to get them all going is just phenomenal. So I don't know what they call choir leaders, but the choir leaders do a phenomenal job, I reckon. Really, really clever. Yeah, excellent. All right,
play
the mystery.
CPU Canon Pratt Ehrlich, Mean Old Street. great. So Dougal. Oh, and by the way, you're listening to Island Life. Apparently, I'm legally supposed to tell you what you're listening to, but I figure you'd only be listening helps. If you really wanted to listen anyway. So anyway, good.
They might have thought they'd stumbled in the national program. You know.
That's right.
We're doing the top 10 Christmas cracker jokes, so we'll do a couple of these, shall we? So we have a comparison because we have Nuts magazine on one hand, so that's a lads mag from the UK, and we have the Telegraph, and we also have the Telegraph readers on the other hand. They're top 10, so we'll just see if there's a if there's a discernible difference in the style of humour that we have. So we'll go from 10 up the way and see how far we get.
Okay,
we do that?
Yep, all go right. on.
Well, what I might do is I'll give you the two, and you tell me if you think it came from Nuts magazine or the Telegraph. How's that?
Oh, this does sound exciting.
Yes.
Oh, a game. I
you
love
can
them.
Play, right. You can play this at home, listeners, if you'd like to. You can phone us in on 372-7192. 372-7192.
No obscenities down the phone, please.
No. Or also, if you've got a Christmas cracker joke, give us a call, let us know. So here's the two that were at number 10, and see if you can pick which came from the Lads Mag, which came from the Telegraph. What do you call a penguin in the Sahara Desert? Lost. Lost. Get it, lost. What is the so the other one that came 10th is, what's the longest word in the English language?
Oh, this will be something obscene.
No. It's smiles, because there's a mile between the first and the last letters. Ba-doom.
All right.
So,
okay.
Go on, pick which was a lads mag, which do you think was a Telegraph?
Well, I'm quite surprised. I thought the lads ones would be quite, you know, mean and nasty, but, you know, hard to tell. I'd say the first one is the lads magazine.
Yeah, spot on, the penguin one. That's right. Because you had the longest word in the English language. That's going to, you know, Telegraph.
Well, I just thought that was a bit, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. Why should husbands make the early morning tea for their wives? Because the Bible says he brews. And so that was number 9. And the other one that was at number 9 was, who hides in the bakery at Christmas?
I don't know.
A mince spy. A mince spy.
That would have to be the Telegraph one.
No, that was a lads mag
one. Oh, really? I was just thinking, I thought...
There you go.
The Telegraph seemed to be quite in with their clever words.
I know, but they were doing the husband-wife thing there, so they were dangerous territory. Who was England's first chiropodist? Think about it now. It's William the Corn Curer. William the Corn Curer. Some of these I might explain. That's quite nice, isn't it? And how do snowmen get around? They ride an icicle. Lads Mag and the Telegraph, what do you reckon?
Second one, Lads Mag.
Second one. Yeah, spot on.
Mm. Ah. No, I can't get them all wrong.
Yeah, two to you. That's right. Number 7 was, what's furry and minty?
No.
A polo bear. Now, that's for those of you who know a polo being a sweet, like the minty sweet. You see what I mean, like that?
So I think my kids would like that one.
That's quite nice. And this is it.
Do you know, I got some polos. Guess where I got them? At the London Lolly Shop.
Oh, and by downtown, was it?
You know, kids have those competitions where you suck the polo for the longest and see who.
See who can. Is that right?
See who doesn't. You know, split the polo.
See, these days and age, who needs things like Facebook, you know, and all sorts of gadgets?
That's
just
right.
A simple packet of polo. In my day, it was simply monkey nuts and a tangerine. That was it for Christmas. And we thought we were really happy. Well, we were, you know what I mean? But now, what do you do?
Yeah.
So that was number 7 about the polo bear. The other number 7 was, why was Santa's little helper feeling depressed?
No presents. Lovely. I don't know.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. No, they actually he had low elf esteem.
Oh, look, Denise is coming early. That got a rise out.
That could be a winner. That one. That was at number 7. So the low elf esteem was a informative Telegraph readers for that one. Did you hear about the man who bought a paper shop?
Well, no.
It blew away. You know, famous. And why would you invite a mushroom to a Christmas party?
I don't know, to get high.
He's a fun guy to be with.
Right.
Get it? fun guy. I've got a sense of losing the listeners here. I've got a sense of drifting away. People having a losing the will to live. what's white and goes up?
I'm sorry, we can't take those calls at the moment. The phone just won't stop ringing. But I'm sorry, callers. We're just at a really busy moment here.
What's white and goes up? This is bizarre, this one.
Oh, I don't know.
A confused snowflake.
Oh, jeez.
What do you call a man with brown paper trousers?
With what? Brown paper
trousers? Brown paper trousers.
I don't know.
Russell. No, we'll zoom up to number two. I love this one. What's a specimen?
I don't know, tell us.
An Italian astronaut. He put it with the accent. What's the specimen? Is he an Italian astronaut? On which side do chickens have the more...
I've got just, that one. A specimen.
It's like they're into non-sanity clause, you know? That's on which side do chickens... apologies to all Italian listeners. On which side do chickens have the most feathers?
I don't know, the top?
The outside.
I guess you are laughing by the time you get there, eh?
You can't help, bro. You can't help it, can you? So look, now here's the number one. So these two jokes are the most cringeworthy, voted the most cringeworthy Christmas cracker jokes from Lads Mag and from The Telegraph. So what's this first one is, well, this one's definitely a bit more English oriented. What's brown and sweet and glides around an ice rink?
I don't know, half-eaten lolly.
Bourneville and Dean. Bourneville's a very popular chocolate. And Bourneville and Dean. Hey? Now, the other one is, what is Santa's favourite pizza?
This is it,
ladies and gentlemen. This is the number one cringeworthy joke. What is Santa's favourite pizza? One that's deep pan, crisp and even.
Good.
I bet you're glad you invited me on this morning, aren't you? all right. So
Santa will be gliding on then.
How many calls did we get?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's just blocking the switchboard as we speak.
Telecom are getting upset. Look, we've brought the lounge down. Oh, right. Well, there we go.
Anyway, so thanks very much for coming in and sharing some of those delightful jokes.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for the Christmas pies.
And enjoy your Christmas.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Great. So here you are back on Waiheke Radio, and Denise Roche, who's recently elected Green MP, and our very special Waiheke MP. I think it's particularly exciting for Waiheke to have a Waiheke MP. So how's it going, Denise?
Great. Really fantastic, actually. Pretty exciting. I'm just getting used to it. We do have another couple of Waiheke MPs. Within the Green Party caucus.
Okay.
That's all the Green Party MPs. There's Kevin Haig, who used to have a bookshop here on the island and still has property here.
Right, I didn't know that.
Kennedy Graham's got a place in Palm Beach.
Okay.
I refer to them as my former constituents, you see.
Right.
And Russell Norman, of course, used to live on the island as well.
But so at the moment, there seems to be just you.
There's lots
of people with a connection to Parliament. I mean, Sandra Lee also has a connection here, I think.
Sandra Lee lives here, but she's no longer a cabinet minister or an MP. But so she was our first sort of specific Waiheke MP, which is, you know, fantastic, really.
Lovely. Okay, great. So you've been in Parliament, it's been about 2 weeks now?
It's 3 weeks since the elections. And I'm not officially an MP yet. I'm an MP-elect. So we get sworn in on Tuesday, and that's when I will be a proper MP.
Okay.
And Parliament sits that week. So we have the ceremonial opening on Wednesday, and then I think we're sitting on Thursday.
So how much of your time will be spent down in Wellington then?
When the House is sitting, and I think it sits for about I can't remember how many weeks a year, but it sort of ties in with the school holiday programs as well, you know, so it's sort of same sort of thing where it has terms, but they also have sitting periods, and that's when you're actually doing the business in the House. So that's roughly about 40 weeks, but I think it's actually less than that, so it's about 32 weeks of the year.
Okay, so it pretty much follows school terms.
Yeah, but what I'll be expected to be in Wellington for select committee meetings, and depending on what my portfolios are and what sort of bills are coming through, and there's also caucus meetings and there's other stuff that we have to do right around the country because we're list MPs. So basically I'll be in Wellington about at least three nights a week. And then all over the, you know, all over the place after that.
Right, okay. Oh, so big change for the family as well.
Yeah, it is. So far, well, it's only been 3 weeks, but so far the kids are actually are quite excited and supportive, which is great.
That's great.
And I have been down in Wellington a lot in the last 3 weeks, so every week I've been in Wellington for a few nights. So it's basically, we're straight into it, really.
So what is that? That's about a four-hour commute?
From here... Yeah.
You have to be in the mood, eh?
Oh, well, this week, I last night I said I'd slept somewhere different every night for four nights because I'd had an early flight, so I stayed with a friend in Auckland. So, you know, just crazy stuff. But I think it starts to settle down and you get a pattern, which I'm looking forward to because I don't operate that well when I'm all over the show. I just kind of like to have things all sorted out in my head as well. So
I bet you start approaching planes like you approach ferries, though. You just kind of rush in, like, you know, all checked in, and you just kind of run through.
Yeah, I think so. You know, on the ferry, you have your ticket ready. You know where you're going to sit. You know, you find your friends. You go and sit there, and I can see how that would happen in airports as well. You know, I'm starting to sort of make sure I've got all my stuff in my bag before I get on the flight so I don't have to mess around finding my book and you know, my work stuff before I sit down. So, yeah, I can see how you'd get used to it pretty quickly.
Oh, no, great. Good. And about the portfolio, what kinds of things are of interest to you, or what kinds of areas are you likely to be given to work on?
We announced our portfolios on Wednesday, actually. So it was sort of 2 days after the election that we had, or 3 days, that we had our first caucus meeting, and the first thing that we started talking about were our areas of interest. And so we've had a 3-week process to negotiate those things, which has been really good, actually. It's been a very good process. So I've got a whole bunch of things that I'm really, really passionate about, and that includes waste, gambling, industrial relations, and that taps into my previous occupation as a trade union official. Tied to that is state services, because we know that in the next 3 years the government's going to be really cracking down on jobs in the public sector. So that's why I'm picking that one up as well. On top of that, I've got community and voluntary sector, which is close to my heart, and community economic development.
That's quite a lot of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've also got Auckland issues, and that reflects my time as a Auckland City Councillor. So, yeah, meaty, very meaty, and quite a lot of work. So I'm just sort of trying to do some planning now before we kick into a busy new year, and sort of look at what I want to see as priorities.
So what does that actually mean in terms of your day-to-day working life? Does that mean you're writing policy on these areas, or you're looking at policy that's, I mean, what having those portfolios, what does it mean in terms of doing the work?
What it means is you can't just pluck stuff out of thin air, right? And so what I suspect it means, because I'm a newbie, but the first thing for me to do is to connect with people who are involved in those sectors, and that's quite easy in the and the not-for-profit sector, the community and voluntary sector, and it's quite easy for me in the union sector, and it's quite easy for me in the problem gambling area, and also the community, you know, community and voluntary sector. And so that's the first step. The second step is to look at what the issues are that each of those groups are facing, each of those sectors are facing. I'll be reacting to a whole bunch of stuff that is being pushed through by the government. We know this, and that's why I've got the state services. And also with industrial relations, we know that in the next 3 years there'll be a lot more legislation being pushed through by this government to reduce the rights of workers and their ability to organise better paying conditions for them. So there's going to be a whole bunch of reacting, but the first bit is going to be about building the networks and being an advocate for those communities of interest. There's a whole bunch of things that are in the pipeline, like in the gambling sector. The government's already signalled that they want to reduce their restraints around the number of pokies that you can have in casinos, and they're doing that because they want Sky City to build an event centre in Auckland. So it's the Hobbit thing all over again, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so there's
so they're looking to consolidate, you know, have concentrate the gambling into certain...
No, they want to extend it.
Yes, but giving it to one
the deal was,
operator.
Yeah, the deal was that they said they did a deal with Sky City, that if Sky City built this, Auckland needs a convention centre. If the Sky City builds it and there's no cost to the government or the ratepayer, that they would look at, you know, easing up on the number of pokies they can have on their site.
I see.
It's quite strictly controlled at the moment, so they basically want to ease up on that stuff. What it means is that basically Sky City has lobbied, the gambling industry has lobbied, they've contributed an enormous amount to various political campaigns, I have to say, and this is the payback. So, you know, there's some real battles that we're going to have to fight in the next 3 years.
Is I don't know anything about this issue, but... on the other hand, is it a good thing that stuff is concentrated in one place and there's less of it in other places?
The harm from pokey gambling is phenomenal. Most of the profits that are made from gambling come from problem gamblers. And it's only a small percentage of people who do have problems with gambling. But they're the ones that are actually marketed to, and they're the ones that actually, you know, have the most to lose. And if you see the amount of crime that's associated, white collar crime that's associated with problem gambling, people with problem gambling behaviours, you'll see that it can really destroy lives. The problem gambling sector says that there's actually a whole bunch of restraints that you could be forcing casinos and pokey parlours to put in place, like pre-commit cards, which is sort of like the seat belts.
What does that mean?
It means that the gambler that before you start gambling, you actually say, this is what I'm spending tonight. So you use sort of like a card.
Oh, I see. Right. And then once you've run out,
you can't gamble
anymore.
And places like Sky City, they keep a track. They do actually track how much people are spending.
Oh, so they can track individuals?
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost, you know...
If Mr. X has just spent, you know, over the last 6 months, has spent $3 million at the pokey machines, there needs to be some questions about where that money's coming from, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's about the duty of care, really.
Mm.
It's not, you know, I'm really new in these portfolios. I've still got a lot of work to do, but my advice is from the problem gambling sector. No, I don't see there's much benefit in consolidating the place where pokies are. I think they're just they're accessible in communities, and I think communities should have a say at being able to close them down. But I don't think extending the numbers in Sky City is the answer to reducing harm from gambling.
Mm. So extending them in Sky City isn't reducing them in local communities.
No.
Oh, it's just having more of them there.
Yeah, it's a completely different set of legislation.
Right. And so what's the issue around having... So are they saying that if there were more there, more people would gamble? I mean, I don't know. How many pokies can you possibly have? They seem to have thousands of them. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah.
Ah, well. Okay, well, good luck with that. Any other interesting things? Other portfolios that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, Auckland issues. That's pretty exciting.
Right.
We've got three Auckland MPs now, and previously we'd had two, which was Keith Locke and David Clendon. And Keith has retired, and actually there's a bit of a gap with Keith's areas of expertise. Just a phenomenal man who worked tirelessly for the ethnic and refugee community, particularly in Auckland, and very, very well respected for his really brave stance on human rights. And so he's retired. and we've got Julianne Genter, who's a transport planner, and she's that's her favourite thing. So she'll be getting stuck into the recent news yesterday and today that the property council is suggesting that we should be, you know, easing up on restrictions around how large our cities grow, and just sort of basically they're promoting urban sprawl. Mm. So Julianne will be getting stuck into that because she's got some amazing expertise in the area. And David Clendon, who is a returning MP, his strengths are around sustainable business, particularly, and justice. So between the three of us, I think we're gonna have quite a lot of fun in covering a lot of the issues that we have in Auckland.
Mm. And also, interestingly, you've got Nikki Kaye and Jacinda Ardern as well, who are all MPs as well.
Yeah, that's right, from Auckland Central.
And you all seem to work together. I mean, apart from these stupid newspaper articles on the Battle of the Babes and that sort of, you know, silly rhetoric, you do seem to get on quite well and have quite good relationships with each other. Are there areas that you can all work together on and agree on for Auckland? Do you have a vision together that you can push forward?
No, one of the things that I was quite keen to do was to do a cross-party to work cross-party on a whole bunch of Auckland issues. Nikki is the electorate MP. She's a national MP, but her role is basically to look after the constituents in Auckland. And you can't, you know, no one else can interfere with that. So it's really up to her about whether she'll be calling on assistance from other people. There is that oppositional stuff that occurs between National and Labor. So as a Green Party MP, a list MP, I'm in a really good position to be able to work with either side. And I'll be really happy to do that because I think Nikki's got some areas where she's really interested in the environment, which, you know, the Greens could be working together with her on that. It's pretty bad, a lot of the other things the national government wants to do in terms of the environment, but as an individual, Nikki's actually, she's
quite blue-green. I mean, if that means anything, I don't understand what that concept actually means. You can't be mining and be green, but, you know, whatever. But
what blue-green means from my take on it is that you do consider the environment, but, you know, because this government has been so focused on the economy, they've kind of divorced the economy from the environment. Mm. And what we say is, as Greens, we say the environment and the economy are inextricably linked. Mm. Mm. You can't have an economy without the environment. And you can't rely on just abusing and using the resources that we have left in order to fund, you know, exponential growth that, you know, just can't.
And to her credit, Nikki has been really pro all the cycle networking stuff, which was also slightly sidelined by the government. And, you know, I think people have noticed that on Waikiki, that she cycles herself, doesn't she?
Sure. I don't think she gets much of a chance the moment.
Yeah.
But,
no, good. And I did have another. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
I was going to. It's all pretty exciting.
Yes,
I really. You know, it's
quite exciting for me to see you on TV. I just think that's. Oh, look, there's Denise. You know, I know Denise because I think you were on. What were you on the other day? You were on Native Affairs.
Oh, yes.
I saw you on Native Affairs.
Yeah.
And obviously the election coverage and some other bits and pieces, and that was quite lovely. Yeah.
The Māori media have been quite interested in me because, you know, I'm a waka blonde, and because my because I'm the new MP in the Greens who's Māori, and that's quite interesting actually. It's quite an interesting experience to be in this position where you don't necessarily have a mandate from Māori to represent your interests, but you can assist in a lot of the areas where we do need a lot more work for Māori.
Mm. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. Although Nikki Kaye is the list MP, or not the list MP, what did you say? The constituent?
Electorate.
The electorate MP, that's right, the electorate MP for Auckland. It doesn't mean that you can't approach yourself or Jacinda about issues that are important to you in Auckland.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah. It does actually mean that for the people who are here, there's actually a huge resource around different people that one can approach.
Absolutely.
Around issues of concern.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I've already had, I know, 3 or 4 constituent requests, which I'm just trying to get my head around, and have said, right, I'll get back to you as soon as I can find the answer to that.
as soon as I can work out what the question is.
Oh, no, I know what the question is. It's like, I don't know what the answer is. So, that's one of the amazing things is entering Parliament is you get a huge amount of resources available to you. And that means that you can, you know, you've got staff who can research stuff for you. You've got the Parliamentary Library where they've got, you know, I don't know how many staff, but they've got 30 kilometres of library stuff in the basement.
So do you have someone who can help you research certain things?
Yep, and we've got a policy and media unit.
Okay.
Which has got about 7 or 8 staff.
And is that for the Greens or is that
just for the Greens?
Oh, okay.
Selecting my executive assistant as well, which is the person who basically organises me and works alongside me to make sure that I'm doing what I have to do and answering the emails and all those sorts of things.
Is that a new experience for you to have someone else in that kind of role?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's phenomenal. I said that I wanted to find out what community organisations and not-for-profit organisations over the last 3 years have lost their funding or had their funding reduced, and what were those community organisations involved with. And that piece of research, people said, yep, sure, give me a couple of weeks. And off they go and do it.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, and which means that you can then formulate sort of legislation or questions of the government about why they're doing that in a formal way. So really exciting.
Mm.
At the council, when I worked for Auckland City Council, and to some extent, but lesser, with Auckland Council, the staff are highly politicised. And certainly we saw that with the waste issue here on Waiheke with Auckland City Council. So they have their own agenda, they run with it, and the politicians are basically seen as people who come and go over a 3-year term. Mm. You don't have the research capacity, and as an opposition councillor with Auckland Council, there was certainly very little assistance that you were offered. So,
that's fabulous.
It's huge.
And do you expect any changes in the waste, or are there any initiatives you could start around localising waste management?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm tied up with community economic development as one of my portfolios as well. From my point of view, I see waste as a basic monopoly across the country with, you know, international companies running it, and there's huge potential, as we know, on Waiheke for local solutions and local jobs. So one of the things that I want to do is review the Waste Minimisation Act, which was a green bill. It was a green initiative, and it was pushed through by Nando Tanksos. But we need to review it to be stronger on not just community economic development, but also on things like product stewardship. And I'm quite keen to actually introduce deposits on containers or refunds on drink containers. And I know that if I do that, I will unleash the dogs, which will be Coca-Cola. And they're already doing that in Australia.
Why is that?
They don't want refunds on drink containers.
Because they have to change their packaging.
They have to change their packaging, and they don't see that they should be involved with the end of life of the product that they make.
Mm,
mm. It's too hard for them. But, you know, that's what our current legislation encourages, that, but it doesn't actually make it mandatory.
Right, okay. Okay, great, good. Lovely. Well, Denise, good luck with your job, and have a lovely time.
Look, I'm really happy to check in from time to time. Waiheke is my base, and it's the place that connects me and keeps me real. And that's my biggest fear, is that when I get sucked down to Wellington, that I'll become disconnected.
Mm. Unlikely on Waiheke, because everyone knows who you are, and people aren't shy about sidling up to you and, sharing sharing their concerns. And I'm sure if you put a foot wrong in the eyes of anyone here, they'll be quick to call you up or stand outside your door.
Yes, that's true. But I'm grateful to our community for keeping it real, actually. But also for the massive amount of support that we've had here. The Green Party vote on the island was 32%.
Right.
I mean, that's
incredible. That's higher than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. So that means, you know, a third of our community actually really support the Green Kaupapa.
Yeah.
That keeps it real for me, but I don't want to sort of turn into a politician who's disconnected from her people.
Mm. Excellent. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And good luck with that. Right.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onewarra.